Okay. Hi, welcome back. Well, we have Felix back to speak to you again. You've met Felix already, but medievalist, scholar, librarian, scholar of modern fantasy, and he's going to be following Stuart Lee's talk on Tolkien with a talk called After Tolkien. So please welcome Felix to the podium.
Thanks very much. Yeah, I've called it After Tolkien, but it's in the program as Following Tolkien, but it's basically the same thing. I should probably subtitle it Standing on Mount Fuji, based on Stuart's quote. So instead of trying to sum up the impact of Tolkien on the entire genre of fantasy, I'm going to touch on just three writers, two of them British and one American, who began writing imaginative literature featuring wizards and quests for magical objects in the 1950s and 60s. How did they respond to what Tolkien was doing? Did they try to emulate him? And my main question is, what was Tolkien's immediate influence on younger writers at the time? So the first of these I want to talk about, I think this was meant, I wasn't here for Caroline's talk earlier, but I think he was mentioned as part of the Oxford School. But he's hopefully a well-known figure at this point. A few years ago, he was the oldest writer to be shortlisted for the Booker Prize with his novel Treacle Walker. He was born to a working-class family in Cheshire, near to a village called Alderley Edge, which is important to his fiction. He was one of a generation who attended Oxford in the 1950s and was taught by and often met Tolkien and C.S. Lewis. Very important to his books and the way that critics usually interpret his fiction is this working-class background and the fact that Garner, he came up through the grammar school system and won a place at Magdalen College, Oxford, and this kind of, to him at least, separated him from his family, culturally speaking. There is a story that Garner tells, I'm not sure if it's true or not, of him abseiling down the outside of Magdalen at night and his feet touching the top of C.S. Lewis's head as he's leaning out to smoke a pipe. Not sure if this is true, but it's a very useful visual metaphor for how Garner thought of people like C.S. Lewis and Tolkien and the kind of fantasy that they were writing. He didn't think much of it. He left Oxford in his second year after the realization that he needed to become a writer to kind of reconnect with his background. He returned to Alderley Edge and bought a very old house for not very much money and began to write The Weird Stone of Brisingamen, which was published in 1960. And quickly after that came a sequel, The Moon of Gomrath, in the center there. And these two books, they're set in Alderley Edge on a hill called The Edge, and two children, Colin and Susan, become embroiled in this magical battle between wizards and elves and dark elves and a dark lord figure. And then he wrote Elador, which is a kind of secondary world fantasy almost, but with parallels to modern day Manchester. And The Owl Service, which uses a story from the Mabinogion, the Welsh cycle of legends. So repetition is a key theme in Garner's writing. There's always a myth that's being cycled through, experienced over and over again. The impossible question is, were any of these direct responses to Tolkien's work, or was it just something in the air? Garner is on record as saying he did not read The Lord of the Rings until many years after Weird Stone was written. He has in several interviews renounced Tolkien. There's one interview where the interviewer asks, "I imagine then that when The Weird Stone of Brisingamen appeared with its wizard and its army of dark elves, people who didn't know the legend of Alderley claimed that you'd copied The Lord of the Rings." And Alan says, which showed that they hadn't read any Middle or Old English. Tolkien and I ripped off the same sources. He did it for his reasons. I did it because, at a simple level, I hated made-up names. If I'd used a name that was familiar, considerable baggage would have come with it. And then he tells this story of when he gave his archive to the Bodleian, at some point, he heard from someone connected with the Lord of the Rings films that one of the Tolkien family had given him J.R.R. Tolkien's annotated copy of The Weird Stone of Brisingamen, and apparently his notes are just vitriolic. What bothered him, the interviewer asked. Trivial use of language. I would love to see that book. So whether or not that story is true, it points to a fundamental difference in Garner's approach to fantasy. He may have been using the same sources, Old Norse, Celtic, Old English, but at this stage it was his way of expressing the importance of myth and local landscape. The second author I want to talk about is Susan Cooper, again probably mentioned this morning. She was born just a year after Garner, and like him, she was at Oxford during the 50s. She studied English at Somerville, where she became interested in journalism as a career. I never met Tolkien, she says, but I went to his lectures on Anglo-Saxon literature, along with hundreds of other students. He was a wonderful lecturer. Like C.S. Lewis, whose lectures I also attended, he was a tweedy, pipe-smoking, middle-aged man. We were all waiting for the third volume of The Lord of the Rings to come out. Her most famous work is The Darkest Rising Sequence, which began in 1965 with Over Sea Under Stone in the middle there, which is a kind of modern-day Hunt for the Grail set in rural Cornwall. And the next book in the series, The Darkest Rising, is set in Cooper's home county of Buckinghamshire and expands the scope of the book to a mythic battle between light and dark. All five of the books, there are three of them there, draw heavily on English and Welsh folklore, Arthurian legend, and feature a recognisable Merlin character named Merriman Lion. Cooper remembers reading The Lord of the Rings with astonishment. She found that Tolkien's work was full of the same Anglo-Saxon and Norse literature she was studying at the time. But she has written about how, while she was bowled over by Tolkien's Middle-earth, as with Garner, the idea of creating a completely separate secondary world was never her intention. The modern material world is the effective setting for fantasy, she writes. An arbitrary time in a never-never land softens the punch. For example, if we're in El Dorado and we find a mandrake, then okay, so it's a mandrake. In El Dorado, anything goes, but by a force of imagination, compel the reader to believe that there is a mandrake in a garden in Mayfield Road, Ulverston, Lancashire. Then when you pull up that mandrake, it is really going to scream, and possibly the reader will too. So there is some real influence of Tolkien in these books, I think. But again, like Garner, there's a fundamental, she's drawn more to setting fantasy in the present day, low fantasy as opposed to high fantasy. And then lastly, Ursula Le Guin, Californian born writer in 1929. She started writing fantasy fiction when she was 9 years old and did not come across The Lord of the Rings until she was 25. Obviously because it hadn't been published until she was 25. when The Lord of the Rings appeared in the library, she reveals in an essay, I shied away from it. I was afraid of it. It looks dull, I thought, like the Saturday Review. It's probably affected. It's probably allegorical. Once I went so far as to pick up volume 2, when it alone was on the rack, and look at the first page, The Two Towers. People were rushing around on a hill, looking for one another. The language looked a bit stilted. I put it back. The eye stared through me. The early fantasy that she was writing, the early fantasy she was reading, were people like Lord Dunsany, or the pulp stories and astounding stories. But she was more interested in people like Charles Dickens and Tolstoy than the fantasists. When she eventually read Tolkien, she felt herself relieved that she hadn't read him earlier. By the time I read Tolkien, however, though I had not yet written anything of merit, I was old enough and had worked long and hard at my craft to be set in my ways, to know my own way. Just get to the end quickly. So her most famous work is the Wizard of Earthsea series, set in Earthsea, which is a secondary world. She had Tolkien in her mind when she first created it. She was asking herself questions about wizards with grey beards who are ageless Gandalfs. How did they become these old grey-bearded mages. And so she invented a school for magic set on the island of Roke, where Ged, who's the main character, attends this school. But the Earthsea books lean less heavily on Western medieval tradition than Tolkien, and instead look to a range of non-European stories and mythologies. Whereas in Middle-earth, antagonists are usually dark-skinned and come from the East, in Earthsea, Ged's skin is described as copper-brown. Taoism is also very important to the kind of philosophical and magic system of the books, as is Jungian psychology. In conclusion, we tend to think of Tolkien as a monolith, and yes, he has directly inspired later series such as The Wheel of Time by Robert Jordan and Terry Brooks' Shannara series. But even at the beginning of this post-Tolkien era, there were writers who were reacting critically to his work or were more intent on pursuing their own ideas of what fantasy could be. Thank you.